The following program is brought to you in living color.
To homeland! Stop! In our country we have great tradition. Change glasses.
Change glasses.
To homeland.
To homeland. Stop! In our country, we have a custom. We always change glasses, too.
Now, everybody drink.
It's the Wine Crush, the show that's all about the grape and the lifestyle it creates. Now, here's your host for the Wine Crush, Laura Lawson.
People like this are a menace to decent society.
Welcome to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay sipping diva, and you are listening to the show that's all about the grape and all its glory, all the vine, all the time, everything you ever wanted to know about wine, but were afraid to ask. That's what we're here for. Yes, we're off and rolling on another version of this great show, and today, as usual, I am off on a tirade and have some interesting things going on. Most importantly today, we do have a great guest. We have Mr. James Conaway. For those of you who are truly into the wine know, you will remember his books Napa and The Far Side of Eden. Well, the good news is James has another book coming out, and I think today will be a perfect time to talk to him about it. Well, since I have such interesting stories ahead of me today, I want to go ahead and get my wine recommendations over with. Actually had a decent weekend here. It was nice. It wasn't covered in snow. There was a little bit of sun outside. And so it actually had me getting away from my favorite drink of choice. Yes, I put down the Chardonnay and tried a Pinot Gris. Now, this is that time of year. We always wonder what to drink because we're so fashion conscious, of course. It's not like we can wear white or drink lighter whites yet. But anyway, Pinot Gris, very light, very refreshing. And it's something that's really, really different after the heavy wines we've had over the holidays and, of course, in the dead of winter. The one I had was Taz, T-A-Z Pinot Gris. And you can find this in your local Mega Mart for probably $20 and under. It's out of Santa Barbara, and what's great about it, it's got melon flavors, it's got fig flavors, it has a little bit of honey, has a little bit of vanilla, but it's just, it's a warm wine. And when I say that, I don't mean you serve it warm. It just gives you that nice, lovely glow. You have a great feeling on your palate. Definitely a wine worth investigating. So give that a shot. Taz Pinot Gris.
Are there any wines that you do serve warm?
You can do like warm mulled wine, warm mulled cider, and anyone stupid enough to go into a Japanese restaurant and order the hot sake while they're on their own. But some you do warm.
Okay. I just wondered, most wines chilled, right?
Most.
Thank you.
Isn't it great when Kent, our producer, actually pays attention to what's going on air?
I just wanted to let you know that I am here. I'm here with you today.
It gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling, Kent. Thank you very much.
We had guests in the studio. They were just looking the show over here just a few minutes ago, and they turned around and left.
I don't blame them. You run most people off anyway.
That's right.
All right, getting back on point. I know I try very, very hard to recommend value-oriented wines, but I'm going to recommend the wine today simply because it's off the beaten path and not what you expect. A few shows ago, we talked about Etude. And, of course, Etude has the Pinot Noir. They have a Chardonnay. They have Pinot Noir, Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc. And these are the wines they're known for. They're elegant. They're great. They're out of Carneros. Well, I had the chance to try Etude Oakville Cabernet Sauvignon. And it's not something they have made a lot of. It's something that's just coming online. It's their second vintage of it. For those of you who are into big Cabernets, for those of you who like the Nickel and Nichols, for those of you who like the Farnientes, the B.V. George Latours, the big powerhouses in glasses, Etude Oakville Cabernet is for you. There is no doubt about it. This thing is rich. It's ripe. It's supple. It's got some great black fruit. It's got great tobacco. It's got great licorice and even a hint of eucalyptus. This wine is a powerhouse in the glass. And I think a lot of people would walk by this wine simply because they know Etude for doing, you know, the lighter slope shoulder bottles, you know, the Pinot Gris, the Pinot Noir, and think, oh, if they're doing that cool climate stuff in Carneros, I don't want to fool with their Cabernets. Do yourself a favor, stop, pay attention, and grab that bottle of Etude Oakville Cabernet. Now, it's not pretty. It's going to cost you quite a penny to get it home, but for those of you who want to surprise your guest or some of you want to try something different, Etude Cabernet is definitely the wine for you. So keep your eye out for that. And hopefully you will enjoy it. Now, if you don't, feel free to call Kent. You can call him on the wine line at 877-4-CRUSH-1. or you can email him at info@winecrush.com. Yes, if these wines are something you really, really hate, that's why we employ Kent, so that he can actually work through your problems and your issues so he can have some fun with that.
Yes, and I care.
Yes, we all know that Kent cares. All right, well, today's show. Today's show is actually a culmination of a couple things that have happened in the last 3 weeks. And it's always fun when I'm able to put a show together like this, because after all, it means I'm in my head and y'all get to hear me talk pretty much nonstop. Well, as you know, being in the wine business, I try and stay on the forefront of what's going on. And I have mentioned this in passing a couple of times, that there is a big vote coming up on in Napa Valley about the Ag Preserve. And for most of us, we're going to gloss over when we talk about the farm report. It's not going to interest us. But actually, this is a really big battle going through about the have and have-nots in Napa and how to use the land. Okay, that's one piece of this. The second piece of this is, some of you well know, I am slated to get married this year. And so in doing that, I have looked ahead and started planning my wedding. And I had thought maybe I would go out to California and do a destination wedding out there at some of my wineries. Now, we all joke about the fact I have been in the wine business since before Moses pretty much came along. And as I investigated places to get married, I was told that I basically had to be a family member at some of these wineries. Well, I didn't really understand that, but I let it pass. Now, the third thing that happened is, believe it or not, people do pay to hear me talk. And in doing so, I've been known to give seminars all over the country about different wines, about different wineries. And I tend to have standing appointments with certain groups. Well, I'm not going to name the group, but it's a restaurant chain. And I had gone in this past weekend to stand up and talk to the staff about wineries and their wine list and how it came together. And as I got into talking about the wine, I'm real good at not talking specifics. If you want to talk about dirt and bricks level and how things are harvested, yes, we can sit down and have that conversation as long as you give me something to drink along the way. But I think the most outstanding thing when you start talking about wines and to get people to remember them is to tell the stories. So as I did this training and got up in front of these group of people, I would stop occasionally and ask people, you know, do you have any questions? Well, hands invariably would raise, and this guy would ask, hey, is this the winery you talked about last year that was the whorehouse? And I'd stop and I'd think about it and say, well, yes, that is the winery. So I talk a little bit further, and then another girl across the room raised her hand and said, Laura, is this the winery you talked about last year that was a post office? And I thought, I really need to get new material because some of this starts to sound kind of repetitive. And as I finally got through the seminar and talking about the wines on their list, two things came to mind. Number one, they needed to change their wine list if they had the same wines on it they did from a year ago. But number two, it seemed like no matter what I talked about as far as the wines, as far as the structure, as far as the winemakers, it was always the stories about the winery that they remembered. So when you take all this together, my experience training a staff, the fact I was planning a wedding, and what's going on politically in Napa Valley, it led me to today's topic. How do you define a winery? Do you define it legally by what's actually in writing? Or do you find it whimsically? Do you find it through the history, through the legend? Because ultimately, when you look at these things separately, it's very, very hard. Napa Valley, Sonoma Valley, around the world, they have set designations for what is a winery. It is a place that produces wine. Now, granted, there's usually 30 pages that go behind that to define exactly what it can be. But when I define a winery, whether it's Chateau Montelena, whether it's Stag's Leap, am I defining the winery by the founder? Am I defining it by the winemaker, by the types they produced? Or is it being defined by the legend? I'm really interested in what y'all had to say, and I want your opinion, but I want you to think about this along these lines. For those of you who saw the movie Bottle Shock and who actually sat through it and enjoyed it, how much did you know about Chateau Montelena before that came out? How much did you know about Chateau Montelena before we got into the whole idea of the Paris Exposition in 1976? Can you tell me what they make now? Can you tell me where they're located? Can you tell me anything as far as their founders? But do you know Chateau Montelena as the winery that broke the French rule as far as how things taste and the fact that Americans were upstarts? That is my question to you. How do you personally define a winery? Call me, 877-4CRUSH-1, or email me, Laura, L-A-U-R-A, Lawson, at winecrush.com. I'm going to await your answers while we take a small break, but when we return, I will certainly have the answers to your questions.
Check out winecrush.com for weekly wine recommendations, recipes, blogs, and news items.
I heard in the news the other day about how one man's $3,000 credit card balance exploded to over $10,000 in no time at all. As good as the plastic in your wallet may be, if you run into any problems with your credit card companies, they'll hit you so hard with late and over-limit fees that your head'll spin, and so will your debt. At that point, you cannot stop your runaway debt problem. Well, yes, you can. If your credit card debt is out of control, you're getting collection calls, you're mad as hell, and you can't take it anymore, call us and one of our partner companies will negotiate on your behalf and show you strategies to help you get out of debt.
If you have $10,000 or more in unsecured debt, call now for a free debt analysis. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815.
Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway announcement.
Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, against the better judgment of our management team, we're going to prove to you once and for all that Proactiv works. So if you want to try it, give us a call, because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv and receive our legendary refining face mask free if you call right now.
You heard it. Be one of the first callers and you'll receive a 60-day trial of Proactiv Solution risk-free, plus a free refining face mask when you call 1-800-727-8614.
Proactiv's combination therapy system uses prescription-grade acne medicine and soothing spa-quality botanicals to create a powerful acne-fighting system. It's so effective it transforms blemishes and bumps into clear, smooth skin.
You can have beautiful, healthy-looking skin. Put us to the test and we'll prove it. Get your risk-free 60-day trial plus a free refining face mask. Call toll-free now, 1-800-727-8614. That's 1-800-727-8614.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Ugh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Honey, put this on top of the minivan.
We're only going for 2 weeks. You want me to back the kitchen sink, too?
Well, is there room?
Hey, you guys, you going on vacation?
Who's that?
I don't know.
Because we're planning on robbing your house tonight.
All right, I'm calling an alarm service.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. There's a simple blood test called A1C that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. Why is it important? Because more than 600 people every day die from diabetes and its complications. If your A1C is above 7, your doctor can show you how to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk. Know your A1C. Ask your doctor, or for more information, go to www.diabetesa1c.org or call 1-877-TEST-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson. Before the break, I posed a question to you. I asked you what the definition of a winery was. Well, right now we are joined by a man who can definitely help us figure that out. He is someone who I have respected in this business for many, many years. We have Mr. James Conaway. He is the author of Napa, which I think is one of the best books you can buy about wine country, and also the author of The Far Side of Eden. He is a man who's seen the valley develop and has very, very definitive opinions about it, so it'll be great to talk to him. James, welcome to The Wine Crush.
Thank you, Laura.
It is such a pleasure to have you on my show. I have spoken about your books for years and years and years. In fact, you are required reading for my sales force.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
You are welcome. Well, thank you. Well, to our listeners, James has written to me what I believe is the definitive book on Napa Valley. And, of course, he followed it up with another great one that talks about the history, the winery owners, the political battles, everything that goes on in that. James, how did you get inspired to write about Napa Valley?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story, Laura. I was the wine critic for the Washington Post years ago and came out to Napa Valley just to poke around. This was in the late 80s and realized there was a genuine alternative culture here. And the more I looked into it, the more I realized that this was a great American story and a great story about land use and agriculture, sort of the ultimate family farm story in a funny sort of way. And so I started going into the histories of the families here in the wineries and found out there was all sorts of conflict and fighting going on. And while I was in the middle of doing my research, the most contentious issue arose, which was the definition of a winery, which is a kind of a silly, sounds like a silly phrase on the face of it, but wineries were attempting to expand, to use their ability, their lawful ability to make and sell wine and stuff that goes along with it, to kind of turn themselves into entertainment centers. And the environmentalists and a lot of the wine growers here and some of the wineries too realized that this was a very bad idea because, you know, a winery is supposed to be for making wine and for selling some of it to people who like it. And so this big controversy arose over how you would legally define a winery and consequently control a lot of these extraneous activities really had nothing to do with wine. And they passed a law controlling the wineries, but now, as you know, that issue has been revived in the face of this recession and the flood of new wines on the market, and the whole fight is heating up again.
That is an understatement. For our listeners, what James is referring to is the Ag Preserve, and this was passed early 80s, I believe. And it talked about
it was way back in the 60s,
well,
actually, here.
68, yeah. And then it was touched up again, I think, in the early 80s. But ultimately,
right.
In Napa Valley, you have to have 160 acres to build a house, but you only have to have 10 acres to build a winery. And that winery has to historically tie into, if that property has never sold cheese or has never sold pictures or has never sold some kind of merchandise, then as a winery, all you can sell is wine. Now, people are trying to morph that. They want the tourist dollar. I wish I had a dollar personally for everyone who came up and asked, Laura, what are the things I have to do in Napa? What do I go see? And this is what we're fighting right now, and this is what everyone is in contention, because this whole debate is back on the floor. In fact, the vote is coming up March 12th as to what the definition of a winery is, whether they can host weddings, whether they can host business retreats, whether they can host what they consider as entertainment properties. And it's going to get very, very interesting. So, James, you are the perfect person to talk to. It's ironic. I have an interview with you from April 25th, 2008. And you gave this to Kevin Courtney, and in it, you wrote, corporations which now own 20% of the Napa's tillable land are a threat. In a wine industry downturn, corporate owners might be tempted to spend big bucks to repeal the Ag Preserve, allowing vineyards to be replaced by houses and businesses. Talk about a man who was on the forefront. Do you remember talking about that?
Oh, yeah, sure. I've been talking about that for years. it hasn't gotten quite that bad yet, but it could still happen. And this new development you referred to define a winery is an indication of the slide in public opinion and the fact that corporations now own more of the valley than 20%. And it's not just the big corporations, though. A lot of the big wineries here that are privately held are also want the same thing.
Well, that's what
which is more leeway.
It is. And right now, the Napa Valley vintners, the grape growers, and the Farm Bureau, Everyone says that Napa should ease restrictions on food and wine pairing events, and they should do away with the regulation that allows tours and tastings at any time, not just by appointment. Why does that affect the Ag Preserve? How does that hurt Napa Valley?
Because entertainment is not an agricultural product. What your listeners may not realize is that people who own cattle ranches, people who grow asparagus, any sort of agricultural enterprise, they are not allowed to have, in most places, to have not just weddings, but to have entertainment, to have outdoor entertainment, to have to sell T-shirts, to have stage events, to have hot air balloons, because it's in the agricultural area. Wineries were given this extraordinary privilege, which, by the way, as you know, quite annoys farmers of other products, that they are allowed to sell alcoholic beverages in the countryside and some things that go along with them. And as soon as you overturn that and allow them to do even more of this and remove the restrictions, they start building not just more structures, but parking lots, road expansion. All of this is to the severe detriment of agriculture. It takes land out of production. It imports people who are not sympathetic to agriculture and who are no sooner in positions, who are on the scene, who start complaining about all the things that go on in agriculture. I mean, spraying, dust, noise, smells, in other words, the rural life.
But which is what got them their grapes to begin with.
Well, it's what got why yes. they come there, because it's still beautiful, because it's not developed. Meanwhile, the wineries thing, it's not just the wineries. Your listeners should understand this. It's the people who are in the entertainment business, hotels, caterers, schedulers, everybody, service, all these people, they want part of the pie. And that's why they want to have these events. And the, what is increasingly become clear is that a lot of these operations, their real crop is eventing. It's not grapes.
That's always an eventing definitely has a lot of fertilizer with it. Hey, James,
yes, right. The BS is quite deep, and that's not good for agriculture either.
No.
And so these events. The events are the real crop here. And,
I see that. Well, James, hold on that thought for me real quick.
Right.
We got to take a quick break, but we'll definitely pick that up when we return.
Are you feeling the credit card crunch? Increasing prices and the cost of credit are stretching budgets and preventing people just like you from getting ahead or just catching up with their debts. American Financial Solutions is a nonprofit organization that can help you get back on track with your debts and strengthen your financial situation. We offer a customized debt management plan, not a consolidation loan or a settlement, but a renegotiation of terms with your current creditors. You could benefit from lower interest rates, reduced fees, finally having your past due accounts brought back into current status, and a single monthly payment. So if you're falling behind on your credit cards, medical bills, or accounts and collections, get your current statements together and give American Financial Solutions a call now.
Here's the number for your free debt analysis. 800-430-8804. 800-430-8804. 800-430-8804. Not all services available in all states. Terms and conditions apply.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant, what would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beech? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air, would you make the right choice? there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
We are talking about our world today. Oh, and someone's on the line.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline.
Welcome, Jacqueline. How old are you? You sound so young.
I'm 8.
Oh, wow. I assume you're a student, right?
Yes, from Jefferson Elementary. And I have a question.
Sure. And what's your question?
We all know the Earth has 7 continents that currently carry 193 countries. Those continents make up 29% of the Earth's surface, meaning that the vast majority of our planet, 71%, is comprised of water. Taking into consideration man automatically adapts to environmental conditions, why is it that I need to take swimming lessons?
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
From the vantage point, Mafatu saw 6 war canoes drawn up on the beach. But Wet held the boy's eyes in awful trance, with the figures springing and leaping about the flames, darting, shifting, bounding toward the sky. The eaters of men. Cannibals. Firelight glistened on their oiled bodies, on flashing spears and bristling decorations. Mafatu watched the strange scene, powerless to move, and he felt doom itself breathing chill upon his neck. In that very instant, he heard a crashing in the undergrowth. 4 figures were tearing toward him through the jungle. He could see them now. He turned and ran blindly down the trail, slipping, sliding, stumbling, his breath all but choking in his throat. Only one thought gave him courage as he ran. His canoe ready and waiting. If only he could reach it before the savages overtook him. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book Call It Courage by Armstrong Sperry. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov.
Welcome back to The Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, and right now we're talking with James Conaway. Before the break, we were talking about the brand new crop in Napa Valley, and it seems to be a whole bunch of events that are cropping up. James, are you still with us?
I'm here.
All right. As we ran into the end of the last segment, you were talking about how detrimental it was that everyone's focusing more on events. I had a question for you along those lines. With everyone in Napa Valley voting on whether or not they can do the events and do the weddings, wouldn't it be easy for them just to say, okay, you can do events, weddings, everything you want, but you have to have the facilities that are in place. You can't build anything else. You can't build any more parking lots, that you are limited by existing structure. Would that help or hurt the situation?
Well, it would probably help, but the idea of policing that and regulating it is really difficult. And I think that would certainly be better than changing the rules. One of the problems that exists here is disparity between the people who have been here a long time and the newcomers. And the people who have been grandfathered here, which you explained earlier, who've been around a long time and have had some history of agriculture and selling, can really get away with murder. I mean, Francis Ford Coppola's place and Mondavi, and there are a lot of them that can do things that they really shouldn't, that they shouldn't be allowed to do, and it sets a bad example. There's nothing that can be done about it legally, but this disparity provides the argument for these other operations to say, well, we need to do this, and it's not fair that we can't do this, even though, you know, they knew in advance when they built their wineries they wouldn't be allowed to do it.
So basically, you've got a whole bunch of kids in the sandbox that look over at what someone else has and just pitching a fit. Is this what happens when you have too much people with too much money and too much of a small area?
Well, particularly it's what happens when you have, and this isn't limited to Napa Valley, it's a problem in certain parts of the country everywhere. It's the problem when you have second and third generations who've never worked, and they're not really equipped to take over the business, but they want their money. So they're looking for, everybody's looking for ways to expand to get more money out of the existing properties that for needs that have nothing to do with agriculture, but have to do with personal lifestyle. And it's indirectly, it's a real drag on the, you know, on the productivity of the country and on the preservation of that, of the parts of the country that we want to hang on to.
And it's also, it seems like it's a big drag on a way of life, too. I mean, to have the opportunity, my grandparents had a cattle ranch. And even in my generation, man, I know how to bale hay. I know how to run a baler. I know how to go out and bush hog. I know how to load cows into trucks. But how many other people know how to do that? I think that's a way of life we're losing when people get the second and third generation that just would be happier sitting on the couch looking at their bank statement.
Well, some of the second and third generation do what you're talking about. Even in the valley, they do that too. But there are an awful lot of people who don't do that. For them, the idea of going back to the land is to drive a four-year-old Mercedes and wear an old polo shirt. You know, I mean, it's they don't have the feel for the place because so much of the work here is done by immigrants. You know, they're the ones who are really close to the land in this day and age in the selected wine business. Not in all cases, but in many cases, it's Mexicans and others who really understand the place and who live with the consequences of various sorts of farming and that sort of thing.
So they're the ones getting their hands dirty. Hey, question.
Well, they're the ones learning as they do it.
True. Question for you. I know that I've read all along, you know, I read Napa, I read A Far Side of Eden. I know you have your new book out, Vanishing America, but in everything I read, I hear that you have a third book coming out about Napa Valley. My question for you, after reading the first two, how are you still getting people to talk to you?
Oh, there are lots of people who want to talk, and there are younger generations of the people are coming up. Some of the people who might not have wanted to talk to me, their children will.
Right.
I don't have such a book coming out, but it's kind of a long-range project. And I'm quite interested to see what the ultimate effects of this recession are going to be. We're already seeing them all over California in a serious way. And, you know, Napa Valley's not exempt from those pressures.
No, they wish they were, but it seems like now would be the perfect time with you out in California, with the vote coming up March 12th, it would be a great time to take another look at this whole subject.
Well, I am, but it's, you know, it is a big subject, and it takes some serious looking into, and the idea of trying to look at the bigger picture, and there are positive things to write about, too, and, the place is still beautiful, but it is... The opportunities and threats that exist in the country at large are felt here, and they're accentuated because of the money.
Question for you, it's kind of off track. When you read your first book, you talk about the Davies, you talk about Heights, you talk about the Barretts, you talk about the founding families. They have such great, robust stories, and you actually suck people in. Are you seeing any of those kind of stories with people who are starting up now, with second or third generations of some of these people or new people that have come to the valley? Are you seeing anything along those lines?
Yeah, there are. People are still dedicated, some of them, but the approach to it is different. It's much more sophisticated. And as I said, a lot of it, technology and imported labor is part of even the most responsible operations today. But some of those families have hung on. The Davies, for instance, are still in there. They're still doing exactly what they were doing. They're successful, and they still have the right land ethic, and they've turned into a really exemplary family for the rest of the valley, though you can't say the same thing about the Mondavis and some of the others.
No, especially with what Mondavi being owned by Constellation now?
Yeah, right.
So it's different things in different times, and that's why I think you've done such a great job chronicling what's happened in the valley. Once again, for our listeners, we are talking to James Conaway, the author of Napa and the author of The Far Side of Eden, and now the recently released Vanishing America. James, do you want to give a few words on Vanishing America before we wrap up?
Well, this is a book of essays about the whole country, although most of it's about the West, and Napa is included in it. it's essentially a look at places that we thought, we all thought were inviolable at one point, and that change has come to affect all of them. And this is kind of an unusual way of looking at them. And it travels around the country in eight discrete essays. And it's published by Counterpoint Press in Berkeley, and I hope you like it.
Well, I am certainly looking forward to trying it. Well, James, thank you so much for giving so much time to The Crush today. Like I said, I am a devout fan and have been for years, and I'm looking forward to reading other books. And hopefully after the March 12th vote, we can get you back on the show and see what you have to say about that.
Oh, well, thank you. That's nice to hear.
All right, James. Well, you take care and have a great day. All right.
Okay, thanks again. Bye-bye.
For our listeners here on The Crush, of course, that was James Conaway. Please check out his books, Far Side of Eden and Napa, if you really, really, really want to get the down and dirty on what happened in Napa and what's happening now. All right, we're going to take a small break right here, but when we return, we'll take some of your calls, your emails, and further pursue our idea of what a winery is.
Visit winecrush.com for guest information, wine recommendations, and more. This is The Wine Crush.
Z-Max. It helps your car, truck, motorcycle, or boat save gas and last longer. The secret of Z-Max is micro lubrication. Z-Max penetrates deep into the metal of your engine and drivetrain where regular oil can't. Z-Max reduces heat and friction, dissipates carbon buildup, restores power, and reduces fuel consumption. Z-Max maintains mileage in your new car and improves mileage in your older car. Log on to Z-Max.com to find a Z-Max retail performance partner. Z-Max. Performance you can feel.
Available at Walmart.
Mr. Jackson, we're calling to say you're late on your credit card bill. Can you please call us to schedule a payment and avoid future late fees?
If you're getting collection calls from your credit card companies and you want to put a stop to it, gather your bills now and call the Debt Helpline.
Mr. Jackson, we've been trying to reach you. If we don't hear from you soon, your account will go into collections.
We can help you stop the late and over limit fees on most of your credit cards and reduce your high interest rates, in some cases up to 60%.
Mr. Jackson, this is our last warning call. The next call will be from our legal department.
Get your debt and credit card bills under control. Gather your bills and call today for a free consultation on how we can help you get out of debt. 800-948-6815. 800-948-6815. That's 800-948-6815.
When a legend like Carroll Shelby puts Z-Max in every car he owns, maybe you should too.
I know it works.
Z-Max with micro lubrication reduces wear on vital engine parts and increases horsepower. If you're a custom engine builder or a do-it-yourselfer, Z-Max belongs in your car. Z-Max. Easy to use. One in your gas and one in your oil every 5,000 miles.
I put my name on the line on that, and I mean it.
Log on to Z-Max.com and find a retail performance partner. Z-Max. Performance you can feel.
Available at Walmart.
Mozart toasties are so very great. Kids rejoice when Mozart's on their plate.
They know they're quite nutritious
and so delicious.
They'll lick the dishes
and soon you realize how impactful your kids involvement in the arts can be. They'll get better grades, make more friends, and express their individuality. When they learn to play some music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts-healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAMM Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson. We just got off the line with James Conaway. Hopefully, if you have not, please do take a moment to actually check him out online. But definitely, I mean this. It was required reading for people who are going to work for me in the wine business. Napa and the Far Side of Eden will tell you everything you wanted to know about these great histories about wineries and the people behind them, which of course means we're circling back to our overall concept for today's show, the definition of a winery. Okay, Napa and Sonoma have their legal definitions of what exactly is a winery and what you can and can't do there. Well, of course, then we have our definitions as, you know, everyday consumers and drinkers about what our definition of a winery is. Is it that old post office? Is it the old nunnery? Is it a great place to go meet with friends? So how do these two rectify with each other? Just on a side note, too, I do want to put this out there. A lot of my friends have asked me over the years if they wanted to go to Jarvis or Farniente or if they wanted to see Jordan. How come they can't get in? How come it's such a snob fest? How come people won't let them in? Understand this. By part of the definition that Napa Valley put out for a winery, a lot of these wineries cannot be open to the public. What this means, it's not they don't want you to come visit. It's not like they don't have this wonderful tasting room. But by law, they have to be open by appointment only. So for those of you who go out to Napa Valley, there are great books. They are in convenience stores. They're in hotels that gives all the wineries listings and their phone numbers. And it'll tell you in those books and those journals as to whether they're open by appointment or not. All you have to do is call and leave a message. And I would say 80% of the time, the wineries will call you back and say, hey, we'd love to have you. So please don't think that most of those wineries that are by appointment only do that to keep the riffraff out. Of course, riffraff being you and me. It's just by law they have to do that. So getting back on point, definition of a winery. Is it legal? Is it legend? What is it? I want to know what you think about this. Call me 877-4CRUSH-1 or you can email me at lauralawson@winecrush.com. Or of course, now we have the Wine Crush Radio Show Facebook page. Come join all of our friends, make some comments, post some posts, ask some questions, and let's have a little bit of fun there. All right, this show is usually all about you, and right now I do have a couple emails I'm interested in answering. Yes, I do get emails that I'm not interested in answering, so it does happen that way occasionally. But this one fascinates me. This is from Mary Beth in Mooresville. Mary Beth writes, I listened to your show about the wine glut last week, and I don't understand what you mean by new labels. Are wineries going to label their wines different, or are they changing their labels because of the grapes? I don't understand. Please explain. Okay, I do sometimes tend to get into wine jargon, or actually back-of-the-house wholesale jargon when I'm on air. And when I say there're going to be new labels out there, what's going to happen with this wine glut? Is there going to be either some of these large companies, like we mentioned Constellation earlier, Diageo, that has excess juice from one of their production facilities? You know, Constellation may have stuff left over from Mondavi or Simi or Franciscan, and decide that I don't really want to sell this on the open market. So in doing so, they have to look around and say, well, what am I going to do with it? That's when you get some creative labels. And what they may do is they get together and they come up with the name of a wine. Oh, I don't know. Lawson's Retreat. And they put all this juice into these bottles. And so Lawson's Retreat is a wine. It goes out in the market. It's great juice. It just doesn't necessarily have a winery behind it. It's not going to say Lawson's Retreat by Mondavi or Lawson's Retreat by Simi. It's going to be Lawson's Retreat. It's going to be its own brand. Now, what happens with these kind of brands is usually they are really, really great juice. I mean, these wines are exceptional. And what happens is they last for about 2 years and then they disappear because, say, we go into the 2012 harvest and all of a sudden there's not enough grapes. We have a frost in the spring. The blossoms fall to the ground. Or there's all of a sudden a really bad drought and the grapes just don't fill out like they should. Well, then there's not enough grapes to support the grape brands like Mondavi or Simi or Franciscan, and they have to put all the grapes back into that. So when I say there's new labels on the market, it's called these incredible shrinking brands. Sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not, but usually they are great values. There's no doubt about it. Behringer and Foster's Wine Estates for the last 3 years have done a wine called Tunnel of Elms. And I have to admit, I am heartbroken that this label is going away. I was kind of hoping with the wine glut we'd see a resurgence in it, but they've just realized they can't afford to produce such a great wine at a low cost anymore. But this is a perfect example of a wine that's created because of an excess of juice without a winery, but its wine is just too good to throw away or sell off to someone like Bronco Wine Company. So there, I hope that answers your question. All right, I have another email. This is from Rich in Washington, D.C. Rich writes, What is a must-do in wine country? See, this goes back to what I said earlier. People always ask me what to do in wine country. Well, Rich, I have three must-dos in wine country. I assume you mean Napa. The first thing you have to do is when you touch down, I've said this time and time again, go to Domaine Carneris, sit on the balcony, have a glass of rosé, enjoy the cool breeze, enjoy watching Winery Lake. Just kick back and relax. You need it after jet lag. The second thing you need to do in wine country is go to Taylor's Refresher, T-A-Y-L-O-R-S, Refresher. It's right there on Highway 29. It is absolutely fantastic. It is a silver hamburger joint sitting on the side of the road that has a better wine list than I'd say 80% of the wine restaurants I go into today. But go get a great burger, go get a great fish taco, hang out, take your shoes off, enjoy the grass under your feet. The third thing you have to do in wine country is get a taxi, please. For all of us who are talking about everyone's going out and visiting and I want to go to this place, I want to go to this place, Highway 29 is not designed for bar hopping, period. I know people think it is. Oh, I've tasted this. I've tasted this. If you taste 16 wines and don't spit, you've had two glasses of wine. So please pay attention when you're going out there. If you're going to drink, please don't drive. They have great car services. They have great cab companies. Take advantage of them. So that's my advice to you. We're going to take a small break right here, but when we return, we are going to continue to look at the definition of a winery.
Need a wine recommendation for a party? Want Laura to address something on the show? Email her at lauralawson@winecrush.com.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need health insurance, you need to make this free call and see how the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company can help you get it. They specialize in helping the self-employed and individuals just like you who need affordable health insurance to get it.
Here's the number. Call right now.
800-799-9991. 800-799-9991.
Don't take risks with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or an individual and you need affordable family health insurance, call now.
800-799-9991. 800-799-9991. 800-799-9991.
Not available in all states. Exclusions and limitations apply. North Richland Hills, Texas. Policy series on file. Not licensed in New York.
Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway announcement.
Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, against the better judgment of our management team, we're going to prove to you once and for all that Proactiv works. So if you want to try it, give us a call, because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv and receive our legendary refining face mask free if you call right now.
You heard it. Be one of the first callers and you'll receive a 60-day trial of Proactiv Solution risk-free, plus a free refining face mask when you call 1-800-727-8614.
Proactiv's combination therapy system uses prescription-grade acne medicine and soothing spa-quality botanicals to create a powerful acne-fighting system. It's so effective it transforms blemishes and bumps into clear, smooth skin.
You can have beautiful, healthy-looking skin. Put us to the test and we'll prove it. Get your risk-free 60-day trial plus a free refining face mask. Call toll-free now, 1-800-727-8614. That's 1-800-727-8614.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master? Well, stop dreaming and start chopping with the Karate Glove.
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the Karate Glove, and I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-ya!
The Karate Glove chops through anything. Just put it on and instantly chop through wood. Hi-ya! Concrete. Hi-ya! Brick walls. Hi-ya! Trees. Hi-ya! Small cars. It can even chop through these 8 guitars.
Hi-ya!
It chops things.
If I can invent a karate glove, just imagine what you can do. Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It's hi-ya time!
When I gave the word, now in the morning I sleep alone. I'm Laura Lawson, and this is The Wine Crush. I want to offer up a special thank you to James Conaway for being our guest today. It's always fun to talk to someone that insightful who sees the other side of what the wine business is. But also want to thank you for listening and, of course, participating, and encourage you to reach out and participate with me and tell me what your definition of a winery is. It's very, very hard to quantify something like this, and we can talk about legend, we can talk about legal all you want to, but I have to admit I have my own personal definition of what is a winery. A winery to me is any entity that produces wine. I know it's simple, I know it's very, very cut and dried, but see, that's what makes this fun. Whether it's a garage down in San Diego that's actually taken the time to produce it and keep their barrels in there, whether it's a small little shack in the Northeast Hills of North Carolina who's trying to put together something out of strawberries, whether it's someone up in Washington State who owns something like 30,000 acres to actually cover their facility, that is still a winery. What defines a winery, though, is what they produce and the people that surround them. You, of course, can have however you want to legally define it. You can actually have any kind of legal ramifications. But what actually makes people stand up and pay attention are the people and the wines associated with it. Wineries, we can have on and off years. You can have someone like Behringer who has had exceptional years, year after year after year. Or you can have other wineries that have been a little touch and go. You can have wineries that may have had a great year in 1996 but haven't had another rated wine until 2004. So it's kind of hard to define a winery like that. So if you take away the wines, you take away the structure, what's left? The people. And that's what it comes down to when you're looking at a winery. Anyone can fly around the world and make a unique wine. Ask Michelle Roland or Philippe Melka. Anyone can go out and sell wine. Ask any of these big conglomerates like Foster's or Constellation's. But what actually makes us stand up and listen? What makes us keep going back to that wine over and over again, year after year? Because after all, we're wine connoisseurs. We know that the vintage changes. We know that the wines change. The winemakers may change. So why do we go back? Why am I constantly going back to Plump Jack and absolutely drinking their Chardonnay and loving every drop of it? Is it because I know that it's always going to be consistent? Do I know that it's going to be the same wine over and over again? No, I can't promise that. But I do know that the people behind Plump Jack care. I know that they're interested and they're willing to keep their consumers. And so I ask you, as loyal listeners and as great wine consumers, think about that. When you're trying to define your favorite winery, when you're looking for a definition of the winery, look past the stone structure, look past what's on the paper, look and see who's actually behind it. And if it's someone you like and respect, then go ahead, pursue them. All right, well, I'm Laura Lawson here at The Wine Crush. We remind you, as always, to sip socially, drink responsibly, drink what you like, not what you're told. But most importantly, in vino veritas, in wine, there is truth. I'm Laura Lawson, and I'll talk with you next week.